Rob Gilbert, welcome to the podcast. Every time I see you, I have to say this. And you know what I'm going to say.
I don't.
Apart from I love you. But you are the person that people tell me to shush, because when I've seen you live, I have never laughed as much in my life at anybody.
Can I just ask you this question?
You can ask me anything, Rob Gilbert.
I'm going to ask you this. Do you say that to everybody?
No, Rob Gilbert. And also, I have to call you Rod Gilbert. I have this weird thing.
Oh, really?
I just call you Rod. When I came on The Apprentice, You're Fired, and you were on, and afterwards, somebody said, you kept saying Rod Gilbert.
I didn't
it's
even
really weird.
That.
I just say Rod Gilbert. But
well, on the panel, so I would say, Gabby, what do you think of candidate number three? You say, well, Rod Gilbert.
Rod Gilbert, let me tell you. Oh, it's very weird how I always do it. But you, honestly, and my husband, so we came to see you do the Apollo, live at the Apollo.
Yeah.
And then we came to see you do a live gig. Just paid up member of the audience that time. And my husband going, you just have to stop. Because all these people going, shh. When you do your tog routine with the duvets, it makes me go uncontrollable.
That's what you want. What's your husband telling you to shush for? That's what you want in an audience,
because,
is people going uncontrollable.
You know, he laughs as well. We're both super fans.
Well, tell him to laugh more.
No, but it's so loud. I become like, I mean, it is.
I'm looking for.
No, this is what I do. But I do that. I go, ah! I mean, it's, I'd like.
Oh, yeah, that is too much.
Yeah, it was.
But your husband's quite right.
Uncontrollable.
Yeah, I don't want that.
Uncontrollable.
You don't want 3,500 people like that in the Apollo.
You are just...
You do get people who laugh too much in gigs, you know?
Is that really?
It can become a real problem, yeah.
See, I was one of those then.
Yeah. Yeah, you could be the problem person.
Am I a problem?
Well, sometimes in a gig, you do notice that somebody is laughing more than ever. And then you start to see people kind of looking round at that. And then people sort of take umbrage with it. And they kind of say, well, it's not that far. And then,
I'm spoiling it for them.
I remember that gig being ruined now by...
It was me. Oh, but you are just my favourite person to make me laugh, because you are, I love your honesty. I love the speed at which you do things. But also, obviously, we're going to talk about all the other journey that you've been on and all that. I hate that word. But you are just, you have proper funny. It's like you just are funny.
You're very kind.
No, I'm not. I'm being honest.
Well, you're very kind.
No, I'm not.
I don't know what to do. Thank you. It's very kind.
Were you always funny? Did you always make people laugh?
I wasn't the class clown at all. Not the class clown. So I wasn't like, not at all show-offy. Not at all. I was in the back, in the corner, maybe muttering to one or two people around me. So I think my close friends would say that, yes, I was one of the funny ones.
Yeah.
But people, once you got out 5 metres away from me, all those people 5 metres away, 10 metres away, in the playground, in the yard, in the school classroom, no, they must be looking at this and going, in fact, people have said this to me before, they've gone, you weren't even the funny one in the class. Like, even, you know, so, yeah, I think probably people would be surprised.
So,
but those people really close to me would get it, I think.
So the ones in the playground,
yeah.
Right, they, when they watch you on telly, they would be... How did that happen?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. How did that...
How did it happen?
Well, it's all down to one lady.
Really?
Yeah.
Who is the lady?
Who's now a baroness. In my mid-20s, I started going out with a young woman who wasn't afraid of life. And I always was. I was terrified of life. That's what I got in my family. Don't stick your head above the parapet. You know, just keep your head down. And my job, really, I was going to just go and work in the council, get out, or whatever. Just keep it. Just don't make a scene. Never been to a comedy club. Never thought about comedy. Never been on stage. The school made me do a school play once because I was so shy. They thought, we've got to get him to do so. So they made me be in a play. I hated it. Couldn't be on stage. Couldn't be in front of the audience. Was looking at my feet the whole time. Awful. It's the last thing I ever would have considered doing. I never wanted, no ambition, no interest, no thought in my head to do it. And she just, from the age of 25 to 33, she just went, hey, you know, you're funny, you should do it. You should. And I'd be like, will you leave me alone? I don't want to do it.
8 years of being told that.
Yeah, yeah. And she would just say, oh, you can do something. And or if we'd see, we'd watch something on TV, she'd go, you could write something. And I'd be like, will you? No, I couldn't. People like me don't do that. I thought there was something amazing about the people on TV who were doing things, or on radio, or on stage. And what she taught me over a period of 8 years was that there isn't. It's just people like us who've done stuff. and giving it a go, and that's all it is, really.
I love that. But it took 8 years to convince
8 years,
you.
Yeah. So when I was 27, she took me to a comedy gig, Eddie, now Susie Izzard,
yes,
which blew my mind. I mean, I was roaring. You say about you laughing too much. I was laughing like that, but the whole audience was, the Shaftesbury Theatre. It was electric. I've never been to a comedy club. I was 27. And then she started taking me on Monday nights to a little club in Soho called The Amused Moose, where people like Alex Horn and Mark Watson and were open spots, and Nina Conti were doing their stuff, open spots, 5 minutes. And she took me there every Monday because it was near my work in Soho. And then
what were you doing then in Soho?
I was doing market research.
Oh, right,
I'm perfectly
yes.
happy doing it.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Leave me alone. And then this little club, they started saying, listen, you come every week, you two. Do you want to help out? Volunteer at the club. Just put the chairs out, do the lights, do the sound, help, welcome the comedians, make a cup of tea, get them a drink, whatever. And I went, no. And my girlfriend went, yes, he does. And I was like, will you shut up? Leave me alone. So she put, I did that. And then the same club went, we're going to do a comedy course. Now, would you be interested, seeing as you're one of the volunteers here, would you be interested in, we're going to set up this little comedy course with this guy called Logan Murray, who's a comedian, and he was going to teach it. It was the first thing they'd ever done like that. And I went, no. And my girlfriend went, yes, he would. Sign me up for that. And then the rest is history. And then I started doing stand-up. A year later, I'd given up my job in market research, best thing I ever did. And I don't feel like I've worked for 20 years. And it's all down to her.
That Everything. Is incredible.
Everything is down to her.
And she's the Baroness.
She is one of those people who just goes, don't be afraid of life. Go and do what you want. Go and do what you want. You can do whatever you want. She sailed around the world at 22 or something like
that. She sounds an amazing person.
Yeah, oh, amazing. And then she's the first woman to breastfeed in the House of Lords. So I think she's in there for her climate change expertise. And I mean, amazing. But then left me. And we're still friends, don't we?
I gather from the way you're talking.
Fine. But yeah, we're still fine. But then I just went, whoa, I've got this comedy bug. Suddenly I'm being invited to Australia, New Zealand, and it going for months. And I found my thing, and she just went, I'm ready to settle down now and have kids and everything. I don't want this anymore. Yes. And I was like, well, you created this monster, Mary Shelley. You did this.
So, but what I'm intrigued about, okay, so you did that gig, and then you thought, okay, Baroness to be. Yes, I get this now. But then suddenly you...
I never expected it to be
But
anything.
When did that moment happen that all of us knew you?
I think it's quite gradual. In the old days, I'm old school. I did it the old way. I did it by, you know, I haven't gone viral on TikTok, and then I did it by...
You did it by
going
hard work.
To pubs and clubs, yeah. And going and playing to five people... We weren't even looking the right way, and for no money. And then 6 months later, you're doing it for £5 with
so
10
how did
people
you
who are
that?
Looking the right way.
How did you keep doing? How did you keep
I
going? The
it.
People that were looking the wrong way.
I just had the. I don't know. There's something in me, despite being this totally shy, socially anxious.
We've talked
person.
About shyness. You
yeah.
and I have talked about shyness because yeah. we're both deep down the most unbelievably shy people. And people go, "What? Comedian? TV yeah. presenter? What? Yeah.
yeah,
you can be
yeah,
very
can.
Shy and do it."
You can. I'm not as shy as I was. I still struggle
you
with
certain moments.
Things.
You get moments.
I get moments. Yeah. But comedy has helped me. I was standing outside the back of Liverpool Empire this weekend, and I walked out on my own to a bunch of people who'd been in the gig who wanted to chat and stuff. And I thought, my God. I didn't think this when I walked on stage in front of 2,500 people or whatever it yeah. is, 2,000 in the Liverpool Empire. Not once did it occur to me that this was a crazy thing for that little kid me to
yeah.
be doing. It didn't occur to me. But when I walked out and there was about 15 people at the stage door, I thought, my God, I could never have done this. I could never have walked out
incredible?
Here with 15 people facing the door looking to talk at me. And that's when it occurred. That's when it hit me.
The shyness thing.
Yeah.
Do you know, we were at I think it was a BBC event, and I was walking in, taking sort of those deep breaths because, I don't like walking into parties. I get really shy. And you were just behind me, and I looked at you and you said, oh, you're having a shy moment. You won't remember this. It's a long time ago. And I said, yes, is it? Can you tell? You went, no, because I have the same. And you said, come on, we'll do this together. And we walked in, and it was at this bit. I know exactly where
I'm
it was.
I'm amazed that I the one who took control.
No, but you went, come on. And I went, okay. And then later on in the evening, you were, and I was the one, and we looked at each other, and there was this nod, and you went, you okay? Went, yeah, you okay? And that's how I remember about the shyness thing. And you helped me go into, that's the thing, exactly like you going, I'm fine with 15 people. I'm fine with 10 million people, whatever. But if I have to walk into a party, I would never go, funny.
Yeah.
Shyness is a weird thing, though.
And mine was often about eating, I think, I realised.
About eating?
Yeah, not just about it, but it was often about food. I one of the hardest things I find, and I still struggle with this, is going into a cafe and just sitting down and having a coffee on my
own. On your own?
Or
you caught me eating a salad on my own, and
no,
I was looking down.
I could never have done that. Eating a Greek salad on your own in a restaurant
by
the window.
I was properly, even though I work here, and I know this place, and I know all the people who work here, I was head down, woo, woo, woo. It's funny, isn't it?
Yeah, I know, because the staff said, she's over there. I said, was that her in the corner? Shrinking away in the...
Yeah, oh no. But so when you're going on tour, though, you eat. So what do you do? Do you buy stuff and take it to your room?
My tour manager brings it in. We just get sandwiches or microwave meals. We carry a microwave with
us
everywhere.
Funny?
And we
but then everybody...
We nuke up a spag ball and
a quick
thing.
Party for one. Do you a meal for one, not party for one. That's a different thing. A meal for one. But do you...
There's none of that on my tours.
that people don't get it. People don't understand it with a comedian.
I think a lot of us have talked about it now. I think it's probably more out there now, isn't it? But back in the day, people would say, you're obviously not shy if you can get up on stage in front of... Because that's what most people's worst nightmare is, public speaking. And it was mine. My God. I didn't want anything, any part of this.
So that child that was just doing in that very small radius of people in the school...
Yeah, my stage was one or two people in right next to me. That was my stage. And I did like that. I like making people laugh.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could... Actually, like Doctor Who, and transport ourselves back.
Oh, I don't think I'd want to go back. I think I was too anxious.
Really? Are you still anxious?
Yeah. Yes and no. Yeah, I get anxious about work stuff, I guess. I guess anxious. I tell you what, I'm not particularly anxious about it, but then I think, what if I don't sleep?
And you didn't sleep last night?
I had 1 hour sleep last night because I was thinking, I'm fine, I'm not anxious about this today. But then what if I don't sleep? Then now all of a sudden I kind of am anxious about it, and then I don't sleep. Yeah. I'm anxious about it.
And then you get anxious about not sleeping, and then you keep looking at the clock.
I've hosted Have I Got News For You on No Sleep. I've stood in on Graham Norton's Saturday Morning Show in the old days on Radio 2 with No Sleep, opening that fader to 5 million people or whatever it was. I've done TV programmes.
So you've
I've
always
lost
had
count
no sleep.
Of how many I've lost. I've done on half an hour's sleep, 10 minutes sleep, 1 hour's sleep.
That's it. None.
Yeah, and it's hard.
Do you catch up the next night?
Sometimes, yeah. I don't generally have a problem. It's just before stuff.
Before stuff. That's interesting. So that's not a knock-on effect from all the cancer and everything?
No.
Were you able to sleep through that? The anxiety?
I slept a lot through that. I don't think sleep was a problem. I think I
was staying awake. There was a lot of other stuff.
Staying awake was more the problem, probably. I think, I don't remember sleep being a problem for that.
Do you know what? Your documentary was incredible, and okay, here's something I'm going to say to your face, and I really mean it. You have got to present more TV shows.
Oh, I knew you didn't mean the other stuff.
I meant
stuff.
The other, no, but
I
about
knew you
this, because you're not going to like this.
Oh.
I want you to present more TV shows, and I've said that very publicly.
That's not my decision, that. Have a word with the
you've
bosses.
You've got to. You are the most wonderful TV presenter.
Well,
I thought
word.
Your documentary was fantastic.
Thank you very much.
That
you,
was,
you need to
no,
get
I will.
Back to base.
I have that. No,
tell them all that.
Seriously,
I'm
I've said it. I've said it to people. I've said it to all the right people, probably the wrong people as well.
Yeah.
I keep saying
I think
it.
That means you're on your own. You're a lone voice.
No, not at all, because everyone says, I don't think he's interested in presenting. And I said, yes, he is.
Who said that?
Oh, I will tell you off air.
Tell me off air.
No, I will. But that, I mean, the documentary you made, was that your decision? Mm. Did you decide to do it?
That was mine. Excuse me, I'm a little drink there. That was totally my decision, 100%. So I'd been diagnosed with head and neck cancer, and... I'd been ill for a few months, and then the first bit of my treatment was surgery. So they cut bits out, and then I had about 3 weeks in bed to recover from that, because they'd also put a feeding tube into my stomach and things like that. So it was quite a lot of.
Was it a secret then? Did people know?
It wasn't. I hadn't decided what to do about it at that point. No, actually,
I had.
No, on the date, July the 14th, 2022, was the day I went in. I hadn't decided whether. What to do.
So how are you... So can I just take you back to the diagnosis?
Yeah.
So what... I mean, I know in the documentary, everybody would... If they haven't seen the documentary, they must. It's on iPlayer. But what was the... How did you know what happened?
So I'd been ill for a few months. I'd having spasms through my face and neck, like sort of like muscle spasms through my face and neck. I was struggling to swallow and breathe and speak. I was postponing shows. Couldn't get to the bottom of it. Was having ENT and things like that. Couldn't get to the bottom of any of it. Was trying honey and lemon and throat
sweets
and all.
You'd had all the checks and everything.
I'd had lots of checks. And but then I was on a fundraising walk for my cancer hospital I'm a patron of, and I have been for 10, 11 yeah. years. And I lead these fundraising walks every couple of years. I've done Patagonia, Nepal, Peru, Kilimanjaro. I was in Cuba on this particular occasion when this lymph node came up in my neck. And I was like, what's that? Have a look at that. Can you feel that as well? Can you see it? And the doctor on the walk said, well, look, I don't think you need to rush home, but you need, when you get home, rush and get that checked. Don't need to rush home from here, but get it. And I went home and they biopsied it and things, and
that was
then just absolute shock. I mean, it's a blindsider, you know, somebody telling you you've got cancer. We all think of cancer as other people, I think. Especially if there's none in your family whatsoever, you know, you kind of think, I still think cancer's other people, weirdly. So which means I guess I haven't processed it very well or dealt with it yet.
But it's still very recent.
It's fairly recent. I'm still 8 weeks. 8 weeks I go in for checks every eight weeks to see if it's still not there at the moment. So I got diagnosed and then they said, right, so first thing is surgery, first step surgery. And then they put a feeding tube in my stomach. They have to pull teeth out with radiotherapy because it's going to damage your jaw bones and they won't be able to do anything after, so you've got to do it all now. Took tonsils out, a few other bits, I can't remember. And then I was lying in bed, sort of coming round and recovering, and everyone was coming past my room. I did have a little separate room, it's NHS, but it was a little separate room off the ward, just, I guess, while you're recovering from it. And I had so many whispers, so many.
You could hear them.
And I thought, I've got no chance of keeping this secret. There's no way I'm keeping a lid on this. I hadn't decided that I wanted to, especially. I didn't know what to do. But that day I sent a thing saying, I'm in hospital, I got cancer, I'll be disappearing for a while. Ta-da. Yeah. And so a word was out kind of thing. And that was it. And I didn't say anything again for months and months and months and months. But then I had 3 weeks at home and then I started chemo and radiotherapy. I was going to start 3 weeks later, basically, on the same day. But on the Friday night, I was lying there. I'd been lying there for 3 weeks. I just thought, I just thought, everything they were telling me, I was going, what? Hey, HPV? What's HPV? What do you mean it's in my tonsils? What do you mean it's a virus? It's not from smoking or drinking or something of it. What do you mean it's a virus? What do you mean they vaccinate against this these days, but they didn't? What are you talking? So all of this stuff, I was thinking, well, if I don't know this, and everyone I'm talking to doesn't know it, there's something I can do useful here to get the word out on these things. And it'll also give me maybe something to do. That was a naive thought, I think, that I would be looking for anything to do while I was having my cancer.
No, because you're somebody who does. You do.
I'm a doer. Yeah, I'm busy. Yeah, yeah. I'm busy. 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 Yeah, exactly. But equally, it was naivety. You know. So I don't regret doing it for a second. But my word, the last thing I wanted to do most days was do a video diary. You know, when you're lying there and you haven't held down any food for a fortnight, you're throwing up every 90 minutes for 2 weeks, or like for weeks, the last thing you want to be doing is in the gaps, trying to film and get, I don't regret doing it at all, but it was hard going. But on the Friday night, I rang some friends of mine who'd done previous documentaries on shyness and infertility in Cardiff, and I said, I'm in bed, Monday I start chemo, Monday morning, and radiotherapy, do you fancy filming it with me? I've got no broadcaster interest. I've got it's not commissioned. I haven't spoken to anybody else. Do you want to do it? And they went, yeah. And so we started on the Monday morning. I went in and started, I had chemotherapy and they filmed it. And
that's incredible.
Radiotherapy, then they filmed that, you know, and we went from there. But it was completely my decision and very glad I did it.
So now that it's all out there and everybody knows, do you feel differently about your stand-up? Has that...
Well, this stand-up tour, I'm just pouring tea now, if you can hear things in the background.
Keep pouring. That's a good sound. was a good sound, that milk going in. Yeah, that was a good sound.
And do you know the other thing? Not just a good sound, but looking at that now. So I've got in front of me a water and a cup of tea. And those two things were off the table for 6 months.
Oh, that's incredible.
I couldn't drink water. Oh. I couldn't look at it. I couldn't look at water. It was disgusting.
But was it? But you also had to be. You weren't allowed to drink.
No, I was allowed to drink. I was allowed to drink. I mean, I couldn't eat and drink a lot of the time, so I was being fed through a machine in the tube.
Yeah,
just allows you to bypass your head and neck, you know. But no, no, it was just disgusting. So it fiddles with your, you know, like COVID fiddles with people's taste buds and stuff. It just destroys everything, basically, the radiotherapy. And then the good stuff grows back. That's the theory.
So can you taste again now?
Now I can taste again. But not only could I not taste, but it was worse than that. It was, everything's disgusting. So water was foul.
What did it taste like?
I can't even remember. I couldn't tell you what it tasted
like. You just know it tasted
disgusting.
Foul.
I'd spit it back out. Tea was disgusting, like gone off milk or something.
So now do you need very flavourful things?
No, I'm almost back to normal. In fact, weirdly, because my show is now about cancer, and I was saying about Liverpool Empire and being out the back.
Yes. Yeah,
and I got all these cancer patients queuing up outside to tell me their stories and talk about it. And there was two guys in the gig that night that I'd spoken to in the gig in Liverpool on Saturday, and they both met me at stage door. One of them's 3 months out of treatment, and the other one was 4 years out of treatment. So this guy, three months out of treatment, was saying to me, "Have you got any saliva yet?" And I said to him,
So the same treatment, the same thing?
Same treatment, yeah.
Oh my word!
Yeah, because another thing that happens is it destroys your saliva glands. So you've got no saliva.
So do you have to put fake saliva?
You have
saliva?
To put synthetic saliva in, or just drink water.
Still now?
So, well, yes, but weirdly, he asked me on Saturday night, he said, "Have you got any saliva now?" And I said, "You're not going to believe this. Yesterday morning was the first time I woke up and there was some saliva in my mouth 2 years, 2 years on." And I sort of turned to the guy who was 4 years down the road and I said, "Have you got saliva?" And he went, "Hell yeah."
And we were
at this little group thing about, so, I mean, that's what's lovely about doing a show about cancer, doing a documentary about cancer, getting people talking about
it. Talk about it.
It's how much we can share the thing, and you can talk to somebody who's a few weeks ahead of you, what to expect, that kind of stuff. And that's where doing this stand-up show is awesome. I love it. Absolutely.
So the interesting thing is that, so I've just been with some young people who've all had cancer, and they're through the other side with the Teenage Cancer Trust, and they were 20, from 21 to 26, and most of them had had a non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and they were talking about the after and the importance of talking about it. And it's interesting because I said to them, in our grandparents' day, they didn't even say the word cancer.
No.
It was the C, the big C, big C. Something.
I had somebody in my gig a couple of weeks ago. Basically, I mean, this is not a show just for cancer patients and their families, right?
Yeah.
But it is meant to be an uplifting, happy and funny show. Proper.
You are funny. The funniest man.
As funny as duvets, right? It's got to be as funny. If you like the duvets tog routine, this show, I think, is as funny as that.
I don't know if anything can be as funny as
the duvets. Well, I think it is. Okay. It's about cancer, right? But I know there's nothing funny about cancer, right?
Yeah.
I have to say this at the top, in almost a trigger warning at the top of the show. I am not trying to hurt anyone's feelings. I know there'll be people in pain in this room now who've lost people yesterday, today, last week, whatever. I lost my father-in-law a few weeks ago to bladder cancer. I'm one of them. I'm one of you. We're in this together. There's nothing funny about cancer, but I want to talk about it, share it, try and give hope to people who might be going through something similar. And really importantly, try and find laughs where we can at it to try and take some power back, you know, from this awful thing, this shitty disease. So lots of cancer patients are coming, and I'm shouting out. Any cancer patients in? People are cheering out. I'm going, over there, prostate, breast, testicular, shouting. People shouting from everywhere in the room. And I, you know, the other day I said we had the two head and neck cancer patients, the guys, breast cancer patients, you know, people have had it years ago. There was one guy who had it 12 years ago, same as I had. So I was talking to him about what to expect down there. Anyway, it's wonderful. It's amazing. It's an incredible thing.
But it's so
it's
important
spiritual.
To talk,
it's
but it's really important to talk about it.
Well, that's what I was coming to, waffling on. There was one guy I had a few weeks ago who I said, right, so, you know, who was there for you? Who helped you and stuff like that? And he said, nobody. I said, oh, that's interesting. You know, how did that come to be? And he said, I didn't tell anyone. I didn't tell anyone that I had cancer. Nobody. He said he just retired from work. He got cancer, same as I had. And he said, I didn't tell anyone. I didn't get into the where they had his family situation and stuff like that. But I just thought that was remarkable that you don't mention it. So go through that on your own. I mean,
but nowadays it's
well, he
it's
just told 2,000 people in a room.
But it's so surprising
in that moment.
There's obviously something about that and his. I hope he's got somebody around.
Yeah, well, he just announced it in front of 2,000 people.
I'm thinking, is he on
I'm
his
guessing,
own?
Yeah. I don't think. I didn't get into it too much. We moved on. I was talking to other people. I didn't want to, you know. But
I've got friends of mine who are younger than you who have recently had cancer, got through cancer, and they didn't tell anybody that they had it. And people were just going, how come you got short hair? And she tells them, I've just decided to cut my hair. That's her decision.
Yeah,
she just doesn't want to because she says she doesn't want head tilts because people just, they do that. You know, it was sort of, Oh, they tilt their head. Yeah. I mean, both my parents had cancer at the same time in different hospitals with different cancers. And so, and my parents were very open about the fact that they had cancer as many years ago, 27 years ago. But and I told people that my parents, but and then I got to the stage where I didn't because people all did. They went, oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I get the feeling that you wouldn't like people doing a head tilt.
No, and I don't think, I think that's maybe happening less. I don't know. And that's maybe because more people are talking about it. I don't know. I haven't especially noticed the...
You didn't ever get a head tilt.
No.
Did anyone tilt a head
well, maybe. I'll look out for it from now on.
Yeah, you will. You'll see it. If anyone goes, Rod Gilbert. Oh,
yeah.
Then you'll know. You'll think, oh, God, that's Gabby.
Yeah,
I
don't know. I haven't especially noticed that.
I just think it's great.
But it is a tricky... The talking about it, not talking about it is tricky. And I know when I'm walking on stage every night that I'm... talking about something, and this show is going to be about something that people in the audience are living right now, today, visceral pain, this, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the moment, the response I'm getting, it's not like anything I've ever done, and it's wonderful, you know. It's like, I don't know, it's just an amazing feeling.
Can I just ask you about saliva?
So saliva?
Yeah, only because of what is it like when you wake up in the morning? Is your tongue, does your tongue go really dry?
So I've got no moisture in my mouth whatsoever. So the first thing I do is I try and run my tongue along my teeth just to try and get a bit of moisture off
and
my tongue onto
my
teeth. It's like running your tongue along lined up bits of chalk, complete and utter dryness. So,
but is your tongue wet then?
Oh, my tongue's a little bit damp, but certainly it feels like I'm doing that.
Wow.
But 2 days ago, 3 days ago, I woke up on my teeth.
Weren't chalk?
Well, no, they were damp bits of chalk. I mean, there was saliva in my mouth, and I was like, "What? I wonder if this is a turning point."
Oh.
That is what happens, you know. Things come back over time.
So it has it. Was there saliva again today?
So the last 2 days, yeah, it is a bit better. It's a bit better. It's a bit better. I'd say it's more than a bit. It's 30% better.
30% saliva.
When you haven't got anything, go to 30%. Happy days, 30% saliva.
So
that's
now
that's the goal, isn't it? That's my life goal.
Now that you're here and you've done all these shows and everything, you won't stop doing your comedy, will you? You'll keep doing your
I'm
comedy.
I'm still doing my comedy. I mean, it's
no,
just,
I know you're in the middle of it all. I just mean
just happens that, to be about cancer.
No, but I just mean that I because you'll be presenting so many shows that for you that is. I feel like the comedy is your sort of lifeblood, or is that a big? Is that quite a deep thing to say?
It's sort of it. Yeah, no. I mean, I love it. I do love it. I love the. On this tour, I'm loving all of it. I think because it's.
You not love all of it before?
I think I had a slightly love hate relationship with it. Like I gave it up for 6-7 years, and I did not miss it at all.
Yes.
Not one day did I think.
Really?
Oh, I wish I could be doing a gig.
You say
not
that? I mean, I've heard
I
you
couldn't
say that.
Care less. No.
Why did you not miss it? And what
I
made you?
I don't know. I still get, and I always got quite anxious about performing.
Yeah,
and that's partly why I'm the way I am on stage. There's so much energy in it and so much thing. It's partly nerves and performance anxiety. And I don't know if you, when I didn't do stand-up for a good few years, I just didn't miss it. I can't explain why
that
I didn't
incredible.
Miss it. I don't think I'm on there. Maybe I'm, I think I've always enjoyed, the thing I've enjoyed most is writing something and then taking it out and trying it, and that work, and then they're seeing if that works. That's the bit I enjoy most, the sort of creative part of it, perhaps less than the actual being on stage and, you know, that part. Maybe that's the shyness in me, or performance anxiety. I don't know. I don't get anxious about writing bits.
That,
I get anxious about performing them. No, that's the bit I get anxious about.
When you did your shyness programme, that was very funny. We'll explain why I just did that on Friday.
So you might
on Friday's
to,
show. People will wonder, what on earth I just did? something to do with my toe.
Right.
That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, God.
When you did the shyness programme for BBC Wales, and I'm so pleased that everybody showed it, you talked about all of that and you talked about the shyness thing. But, see, it just fascinates me that you stopped and you didn't miss it.
Yeah.
I don't know why that fascinates me.
I know that runs
so much
counter to a lot of what you hear, which is that comedy is sort of a bit of a drug and you get the bug and you
yes,
and you need to keep feeding it. And it's about I don't know, replacing substitute affection. I don't know, love. You get it, that adoration from the crowd. You need that. And you're like, I didn't, all I can say is I did not miss it at all for those 7 years. I'm very glad I've gone back to it, but it's the writing and then, getting a kick out of the creative part that I really love. On this tour, that's very different because I guess stand-up is always about connection. And I feel that with this show, with this material, and in the old days I did things about tog ratings and stuff, that was fun.
Oh, yeah. Very funny.
It was fun and creatively fun and stuff like that. But in terms of connecting with people on a human level, this is something else for me.
Of course it is.
And I guess in my work, you know, in my work experience series, I don't know if you've seen, I do a little series called Work Experience, right? BBC Wales. It's finished now, but I did very, very lucky to get 9 series and I loved it. And
again, available on iPlayer.
Available on iPlayer, yeah.
In fact, the whole of iPlayer is Rod Gilbert, Rod Gilbert's life.
Well, I think in lockdown, I think they chucked it all on there and went, here, have that. And in that, the things I enjoyed most were teacher, carer, stuff like that. Those are the things I really love doing. And I think what I've realised is that it's part of me that just doing stand-up about tog ratings and stuff like that, it wasn't scratching that itch. It wasn't. I don't know. It wasn't quite doing it for me. And I guess what I think I've managed to do for me is find the perfect thing, which is writing comedy and stand up, but about something that has that same feel as being a carer or a teacher.
Well, it is.
Or it's that connection, that human connection.
Completely.
With you're people helping on big so many life people. Stuff.
That's, but you. But I get that you want to help. You're a helper.
I think so.
That's what you want to do.
I think so. That was, I mean, certainly of all of those 33 episodes, Kira was the one I would, teacher.
You know. But what you do as a comedian is something really vital. And I know that sounds like I'm sort of trying to build it and everything. Because I friends of mine, we've got mutual friends who are comedians. And I say to them, especially at the moment, every time you turn on the news, we need you guys. So it's vital at the moment because I can't listen to the news or watch the news after lunchtime. You know, then I'm going to worry about it all evening. And it is, and that's why we need laughter. And laughter, somebody I know is very ill at the moment, very, very ill. And I always say, they always say, oh, why am I always so tired? And I say, sleep's the best medicine. And then I'll just say something and they'll laugh and they'll, oh. And I'll say, yeah, but laughter's the best medicine. I think laughter beats sleep in a way. Although I'm sure doctors won't agree with me, but laughter is vitally important. Yeah. And so you bringing out your cancer story and talking about that and making people laugh.
On Saturday night in Liverpool, this gig in Liverpool, I mean, this happens in most of the gigs I'm at, if in one form or another, something these kinds of things. There was a lady who wrote to me, a lady called Alex Walsh, who wrote to me and she said, my dad's had what you've got, but the treatment hasn't worked. And this is, you know, that's not the first person I've known like that. You know, there's every chance mine can come back and who knows, you know. But it had gone to his brain and he's now in a wheelchair. And she said, I'm bringing him along on Saturday night. I want it to be one of our last memories together kind of thing. And I wrote back to him. I said, great, stay behind after the show. I'll come and meet you, you know, and we'll meet in the auditorium kind of thing. And we did that. And it was just that. And yes, yeah, it's moments like that where you kind of go, God, she wanted to come along and that's what she wanted to create this memory with her dad of laughing together at something. So it's that, yeah, that's where the power of laughter, I guess, can be the space that allows real happiness, you know, even though their lives must be so tough at the moment. They're so full of, I don't know, must be gloomy at times, you know. And you kind of, there's moments like that. You know, most of the time I just think, oh, my silly little job, there's nothing, we don't offer anything to the world as comedians, but there's times like that.
Oh, you do.
There's times like that. Or the occasional email that goes, oh, I lost my father a couple of years, and one of my happiest memories is seeing him laugh at you when he's. I mean, those moments kind of go, oh, maybe it is quite important.
You are making, yeah. It is important. Yeah. But also that you're still here. I mean, what I can't bear, it's very interesting. One of the young people I was just with, she was told when she was 16, she's now in mid-20s. She was told when she was 16 she was going into palliative care and she was going to die. She had a 3% chance of survival. And amazing young woman. And she said that she decided to live for her mum and because her mum had lost 2 other children. Oh. And I said to her, so we were talking and she's an amazing girl. And I said that decision was a very brave decision. She's now... she doesn't have an eye, all sorts of, that's her story, so it wouldn't be fair to me to share too much. But She said, everybody asks me now, do I feel differently about life? I said, well, I won't ask you. She said, no, I really want you to ask me. So I went, okay, I'll ask you. Do you feel differently about life? She said, yeah, every single day I wake up. And I look out and I think, I'm alive. And I said, it's really powerful hearing it from somebody who's 24.
Yeah.
You know, and I said, I've got lots of friends who very sadly haven't been well or now are all fine. And they don't have that attitude. And that young girl, what an amazing attitude. Yeah. And she wants to do something with her life.
Yeah.
I actually said to her, I was coming and meeting you and interviewing you. And she said, no, see, he makes me laugh. And I just thought, wow, I've got to share that with you because you help her. She now wants to help people. That's the thing that she wants to do.
It teaches a lot, the young.
Yeah.
Can't they?
But life is pretty powerful thing.
Well, I mean, listen, you know, you on this podcast, I know you like people to bring, I know it's not this part of it, but can I talk about it now a little bit?
You can talk about whatever you want.
You said, bring an object that brings you joy.
Yeah.
Because I was trying to think, what shall I bring in? And I there was so many. I was going to bring in a bottle of water, and I thought, I won't bother taking one, you'll have one there. you'll provide water, surely.
Yeah, we've given you water.
And that was because for so many months, water was disgusting to me. Yeah. And now the simplest thing, like water, which is just
brings
my
you joy.
Life force.
Yeah, I love that.
Or the other thing is, which I've hated all my life, is the alarm clock. And the alarm, which is now a phone alarm clock.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
In the old days, it was the big thing on your...
I still have one.
Do you?
I have, no, it's a digital one and it's neon and flashes. Yeah. It's my
whatever you've got. Well. It was horrible.
Yeah.
That has always been.
Really? You didn't like them?
No, because it always meant get up for school, get up for this, get up. It's never a good reason why you put your alarm on, was it, in the past? Now, my alarm comes on in the morning and it is the greatest... I'm here and I'm here potentially to enjoy... another day and to live another day and literally get out there and look at the sky and smell the grass. So the alarm clock for me now is a thing of absolute heralds the joy of another day. Whereas for 50 years, it's been awful. It's been something I dreaded.
It's the same as that young girl. There is a thing. She looks out of the window and says, I'm here.
Yeah, that's exactly why.
What's really
high on life.
Isn't it? Sad.
But we might have to explain.
We will explain in a minute.
There's something in the room.
There's something in the room that might be something to do with my big toe. I'm very lucky. I'm, you know, touching wood and all the rest of it. Very, very lucky that I've been one of those people that has always sort of lived in the moment and loved life. And I used to go to bed and I couldn't go to sleep because I wanted the next day to happen. Because then that's the day I might become a TV presenter when I was a child. That's, you know. So for me, it was always... But I find it unbelievably sad.
How do you cope now? You fulfilled your dream.
I still want another. I just want to do more things.
You just want more of it.
I just want to do other things. And I'm like that.
I've always been like that. I just didn't like the alarm part.
It's the same thing. Every time you speak, it's like, oh my God, it's the same. But isn't it a shame that for many people, they have to go through something so horrific to think, wow. I'm lucky.
Yeah, and I think it's so... I've always gorged on life. Like, I've... Despite being shy and a loner and all these weird things... not weird things, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I've always said... I mean, my wife howls at this because she thinks I'm such a misery. Like, I've always said to her, I'm the happiest person I know. I gorge on life. I absolutely consume it. Nom, 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 can't get enough of life. And then that's why the cancer thing was a bit of a curveball at the time. But now I'm back on the trajectory I was on, but even more so, times 10. You know.
And how are the togs in your duvet?
I still don't understand them. Still don't understand them.
You get me guffawing far too loudly.
Yeah.
Rod Gilbert, I think you are just completely and utterly wonderful. I love you so much. Oh. You are the funniest, kindest, most beautiful soul. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything I say back at you now is just going to sound like I'm...
Yeah, no, you can't say it back. It's about you. It's not about
me. I really like you too.
No, it isn't about
Big
you.
Big fan.
It's about you.
Big fan.